Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Well, good morning to the listeners of Ortho Joe, and Mo, good morning to you. I think this is the first taping we've done in 2022, so I have my
best wishes.
Cup. Yep, and Bob, as our guest, as the editor of a new feature of David Jess, you're going to be getting this fantastic Ortho Joe mug in the mail, which you can display with pride as you round and in between patients and in the clinic, and your staff will be jealous with the red and white and black theme that has been so expertly designed by our JVJS colleagues. So welcome our guest, Bob Skank from the University of New Mexico, the professor and chair. Condolences for that responsibility. Mo is the chair of surgery at McMaster, and I am the chair emeritus of orthopedic surgery at the University of Minnesota. I got out on an early release program for fulfilling all my behavioral metrics. And I trust that someday you too will be a free man from the ball and chain of that job. But we're here to talk about the latest feature in JBJS, which just came out in print version a couple of days ago. And that's a section of the What's Important area that is called Arts and Humanities. And Bob is the editor of the Arts and Humanities section, and maybe a good way to, and I know this is a huge area for Mo, and of course Mo is the first contributor to this, but Bob, maybe we can start out with, how did you become interested in the arts and humanities? I know you've got a story that links to Hopkins, et cetera. So maybe just tell our audience how you got into this sort of thing.
No, thank you. And it's such a pleasure to be here this morning. And as you said, being chair, it is ball and chain. It's been 16 years. I thought residency was tough, but chair position, that's a new level. But it's been fun. It's actually been a good time. But arts and humanities is very interesting. I was raised in a family of, my father was a businessman and my mother was a college professor in music and drama. And so I was exposed to the arts from a young age, going to shows and somewhat being a critique of someone's singing voice, listening to my mother. When I got into my high school years, I was, like most of us, very science-oriented and loved science. And as you all know, when you're a pre-med student, it gets to be a little bit grinding because you want to be a physician, not at all costs, but you want to be a physician. And I was at University of Colorado in the state I grew up in my sophomore year. And I noticed a nice opportunity to get out of the pre-med track. And it was called the Human Biology Program at Johns Hopkins in 1979. I applied to it and got accepted, and they must have mixed up my application with someone else. But nonetheless, I got into Hopkins, and they didn't want us taking any more science on our undergraduate days on our path for like a 2-5 MD program, and you got a Bachelor of Arts. So I immersed myself in arts during those 2 years of finishing up my undergraduate degree at Hopkins, all the while getting my MD 3 years after that, and had a nice interest in art, especially drawing, and writing. And like all of us, you go to med school, you do some art. And I was very fortunate to go to the Maryland Institute of Art and take a class there, and had a great interest in it. But then I was swept into orthopedics, which is one of the most lovely fields in the world. You have so much energy and interest, and it's such a phenomenal specialty. And by the time I was an assistant professor, I wanted to publish in more areas. And I'd had this background, and I came across this author. He's a very simple writer. He writes mostly autobiographical stuff at turn of the century. His name was Ralph Moody. And Ralph Moody wrote stories starting when he was 50 years old. And come to find out, when he turned 50, he had made a pact with himself. And this was in 1945 when he turned 50. He was going to have saved $50,000, be able to retire, and start writing. And so when I was a junior attending in San Antonio, I worked for Jim Heckman and Charlie Rockwood from 1990 to 2000 at the University of Texas. I made that pact with myself that when I turned 50, I'd hopefully have more than $50,000, but that I would start writing. And sure enough, that happened when I was in New Mexico, and I started writing. And I was very fortunate. University of New Mexico had an arts publication that I submitted several of my short stories and prose to. And for the audience, when you're starting out writing, it's really fascinating and probably the best avenue to write some biographical story that's interesting to you and that's interesting to other readers. I also sent many of my stories to, it sounds like Christmas Story with Ralphie's dad, you know, and writing a story for a prize, a major prize. But there was a Southwest Writers Organization that had annual banquet and dinner here in Albuquerque. And I submitted all of my short stories there that I thought were of quality. And four or five of them won. And then they were simultaneously submitted to be published in the University of New Mexico Medical Muse. The editor, now emeritus editor, and I've taken over for him. Loved my writing, and so you just continue to publish. And you know, when you look at and for this for the audience, when you look at Moe's piece of art, when you look at his self-portrait, you can instantly tell that it is a very quality piece of art. And so those artists out there that are orthopedic surgeons, it's really important that you can express yourself. Writing is a little more difficult because you have to have someone else critique it, look at your poetry and prose, but it's really a good place to start. And I think there's many benefits. Studies have shown, it started in Yale, at Yale University, where medical students and residents and even attendings have gone through traumatic times. If you write about them, it can create some self-healing. You can release some of the, let's so to speak, demons. And much of my writing was not about that. It was about a fun story in Colorado, picking a movie for a high school show when I was a freshman. It's a funny story. It's called The Magic Christian. It has nothing to do with Christianity. It's just a movie that I picked that turned out to be a little bit pornographic accidentally. I couldn't tell in the 1970s. And my principal, Wallace Parker, shut it down. He told me my career was over. And the rest of the student body, which was only 260 people in Carbondale, was like, little skank, that's the best movie anyone's ever picked. So But nowadays, and in the medical muse, and we recently just had one submission for JBJS Arts and Humanities that is a self-healing piece.
And
I really hope that everyone understands our shared vision. This is for arts and humanities. This is prose, poetry, fiction, nonfiction, photographs, paintings, art that means something to an orthopedic surgeon that before Dr. Swinkowski's, before Mark's, you know, vision, there was a hard place to get an avenue of publishing this. We have it at Medical Muse, and we've even had issues at Medical Muse in New Mexico where we've asked, you know, physicians and medical students and nurses from around the country to submit, but mostly for ours, it's the New Mexico medical community. But this is a great avenue for people to publish, you know, areas. And quite frankly, there's a lot of talent and ability in physicians outside of just how we take care of our patients. And so that's basically my story. And I hope that resonates.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that background, Bob. It's really fun to hear your journey. And I'm going to ask Mo about his journey here in a second. But just for the audience, Bob sent me a couple of copies of Medical Muse, I don't know, 2 years ago. And we had a vision for expanding the What's Important line of contribution to the journal into this area. And it just fits so well. And that's what's led to us instituting this section of What's Important. But yeah, so Mo, you were the first contributor, and you have written quite a bit in LinkedIn about your own personal journey along this area. And it's interesting. I've read in a couple of your postings there about this age 50 thing. You've written that same similar number. I think 52 or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
Maybe you could just talk about your journey and this whole bit about how people who are often in the scientific world, deep into science and orthopedic surgery, maybe should not neglect this important area any longer.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see so many parallels in Bob's story from my own. And I also see where where I diverged in some ways. So the 50 is the magic number. But for me, I hadn't planned on having an age 50 plan, an epiphany per se. What happened for me was I was with our program director of all places, and we were doing another short trip to India for a meeting, and we decided very impromptu sounds crazy, but you know, we had days, let's go right over to Darjeeling and just do a hike, and let's just do something for a day, like, you know, we have a day. So we went there. Fast forward, it's now January 2018. I'm turning 50, or both the page is turning in March for me in 2018, turning 50. And I'm staring out into the Himalayas at Mount Kanchenjunga, around 10,000 feet. And I'm staring there, and you have those moments where you just stare quietly with someone. You're not talking, you're not communicating, you're just looking out. And I turn to him and I say, how have I lived 50 years of my life and I'm seeing this beauty for the first time? And it's like, we have it all wrong. And I didn't know what that meant by meaning we have it all wrong, but I knew there was something that had to change. And that day, we went back and I said, I'm going to start doing stuff that I've always wanted to do and I've just never made time for. There's no better time like the present side of psychology. And I actually have the first sketch I did. And I actually contemplated whether I'd put that sketch into this contribution of, you know, a look in the mirror. Because for me, it was that day, January 17th, where I got my sketchbook and I did my very first sketch, and then there's been several hundred after that, but that was the first one. And it wasn't by any means anything that I look back at now and say, wow, that's a great first sketch. It was more just, wow, look at me, I'm taking time to get back into it again. That led to me doing a ton of reading around this issue of, you know, I can't be alone in this. I can't be. And you know, when you look at the literature, specifically in the area that I've been interested in research areas, at the highest level, Nobel laureates have, you know, there's been publications about Nobel laureates being many times more likely to be musicians, many times more likely to enjoy the arts and literature, many times more likely to enjoy writing and poetry, and it goes on and on and on. And when you start looking for it, you see it everywhere, Mark. And I think for me, what rings truly with Bob's storyline is some of us know right from birth that all children are born as artists, creatives, and somehow life has a way of deferring our inner child, our inner creative spirit. And the more we can educate, encourage, and focus at all levels, and provide outlets like the JBJS in this case, for people to express that, the more I think we normalize that having additional interests outside of your core isn't a distraction. It actually makes you better at your job. That's kind of how I've been, focusing on it. And there's any number of ways we can take this conversation, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah, I think this is a really, I sense that the message that you're sharing there in, you know, reading in other areas of postings on social media, et cetera, that this is, I don't know that it's big enough to call it a movement yet within orthopedic surgery, but, and hopefully this project that Bob's leading and what's important will contribute to that, but to a message to our profession to join arms and really do think about a more balanced life than just grinding out research or patient care or administrative hassles in the case of a department, beleaguered department chair, and to keep balance in one's life. And I'm hopeful, very hopeful that the what's important line will contribute to this.
Well, if I could ask you a question, Bob, on a question that I get asked all the time is, well, you know, you wouldn't have the luxury, Mo, of being able to paint in the afternoon and do all the things you like to do if you hadn't just spent the 120 hours per week ignoring everything to get to the point where you can do it. And the argument I tell them, I say this with a great deal of regret, that I wish I had spent much more time balanced in all those, because who knows how much further I could have gone. They have a hard time believing that, Bob. And I wonder from your own experience, if you could share, you know, at least some sort of statement to help that individual who says, well, you know, Dr. Skank got there because he spent so much time ignoring some of those things. Now he can have, you know, at age 50, you can go back and change it.
No, that's a great question. You know, I think we all look back on this driven career and those of us on chatting are a little bit of an old school, very focused academic, published 10 papers a year group. And quite frankly,
100 in most cases, Bob. Like, go ahead.
I know, 100 in most, 10 in mine. And but, Mo, your point is well taken. It doesn't balance giving you an opportunity to do your art or to some interesting craft work or some release actually spills over into the rest of your world. Because my career was so, I all I could do was raise children and be an orthopedic surgeon. And I think missed a couple of things with my kids I couldn't get someone to take call for me here in New Mexico. And my son was in a semifinal football game in the state, played way south. And I couldn't make it to that. And that was probably, 16 years ago, something like that. And so balance in your life, and I think the young orthopedic surgeon, we certainly teach them better than I was taught or modeled. The young orthopedic surgeon knows that balance is critical. So you're absolutely right. You need to focus on balance because it helps in so many other areas of your life, not just being able to create art. And I think when you tell the young orthopedic surgeon, you know, you need to have balance in your life. Well, when you take a few minutes and just, you know, to stop and smell the roses, let's use that phrase, you're going to have an opportunity to do things, including art, but that just make you a better person and certainly not create any regret for things that you may not have done that really, in all reality, you should be able to do. So your question is excellent. I think balanced is just a healthy lifestyle that you can still publish, if you want to, 100 papers a year. But it's a new message for us to tell orthopedic surgeons that it's okay to take time off. It's important to take time off to create a healthy lifestyle. And then there'll be this added benefit that you'll be traveling, your mind will release, and you'll think of an interesting poem or take a photograph or with your skill, Mo, do a sketch that can mean a lot to other people. And so I always had the desire to create art when I was working, you know, the many, many hours. I always had that inner desire. And I just really didn't have the time, especially when my kids were young. But it's been a really good transition for me, because as a department chair and as the sort of the, you have to be somewhat of a sensei for the department. I that story about missing my kid's football game, and my oldest son, he's an attorney in Denver, he's a prosecutor. He's like, Mom was at the game. It's totally like he's totally for. I've already talked to him about it, but it's one of those things that I tell my residents that story. Don't, you know, you make sure you have balance, because there's so many other benefits to this approach with life balance, not just art, but just a healthy lifestyle.
You know, if I could just add to that, Mark, and I'm sure this would resonate with both you and Bob, but the idea of doing more work makes you better at your work was my realization in 2018, that doing more of anything, writing another 100 papers, wasn't going to make my next paper the big idea. And it got back to, how do you get creative and how do you get ideas? Bob has alluded to the fact many ways that when you take a break and he writes, whether it's poetry or prose or short stories, it is such a creative outlet that it allows you to percolate. And for me, to sketch is like mindfulness. So you're just basically letting thoughts of your day, of your week percolate, to hopefully the good stuff comes out. And I have genuinely found that taking more productive time away to do some of the things I love has led to better ideas. And for those in the, I'd say, the younger generation now, ideas are the currency of the century. And so if you can't generate ideas, you're going to have a very, very hard time being able to find, you know, growth in your life, because things are moving so rapidly. So it's one thing to work, but it's another thing to work smartly and have good ideas. And I do think the humanities is a critical part of that. And if we could almost make it mandatory in orthopedic training, I would even go as far as say that we should be having mandates to make sure that we are not letting the creativity be squeezed out of every, quote, childhood artist and creator there is as they come into more and more education.
Yeah, so life balance for better ideas and also for better relationships. I know you've written quite a bit about that in recent postings as well. So, well, this is all very good stuff. So, Bob, we've let's just for kind of in closing for the audience. So we're looking for poetry, prose, sketches, art, photography. How about a picture of somebody's woodworking project with a story behind it? How about a soundtrack of a song that they've written or recorded? How far do you think what's the breadth of what we're looking for here?
Oh, I think it's the orthopedic surgeon's creativity. In reality. reality. And you brought it up just then. It's that which we would look at as a piece of artwork, something that will help humanity. I think the only thing that we would caution is at the Medical Muse at University of New Mexico, we try to avoid really politicized statements. Let me just give an example. We had some criticisms of the hospital and what they did in certain areas. And we tried to work with the author to edit it. But we have to show some discretion in terms of political viewpoints. I think just for the safety of our readership. But other than that, please send us what you're doing and in what's interest, because, you know, Ken DeHaven recently passed away, and I never trained with the sweetest orthopedic surgeon of all time, but for some reason, he and I hit it off, and we would bump into each other at the AOS or the AOSSM, because my colleague, Dan Washer, trained with him. But Ken and I became some colleagues, very senior to me, but I loved listening to him. And in his, when he retired, he was like, "I repair grandfather clocks." And, I do similar type of woodworking. But I was thinking about this. If Ken DeHaven sent me a picture of a before and after grandfather clock that he had refurbished, I would love to publish that in JBJS Arts and Humanities. So it's a lot of what you think is art, many people will think it is as well once they take a look at how you define it and enjoy it. And so I was excited about this yesterday. And I must say one last little story. I do a lot of work on multi-leg knee surgery, and I've published a lot. And like Mo said, at some point in time, at this stage of your career, if you're publishing, it should be mostly for mentoring young people. That's the net. It's either the brilliant idea, Mo, or it is let's mentor a young person and let them get their name on the paper, but show them how to process it and let them contribute so they deserve to be on the paper. I think that's what publishing is for. But in this day and age, we really want to support our young and or older orthopedic surgeons that, like Mo said, we expect you to have a soft side, because everybody has to have, in business, you say hard skills, which is like bookkeeping, Excel spreadsheets, but you also say soft skills, which in our world is bedside manner. And in business, it's, you know, how you work with the customer. Well, we want the orthopedic surgeon, we want you to have those hard skills, how to nail a femur, how to treat things properly, how to look at alignment, you know, how to treat patients within the most proper standard of care. But these soft skills of being more human being really can be helped by arts and humanities. And so whatever you're of interest, we'd like to take a look at it. And if we say, you know, it doesn't work this time, that doesn't mean submit it. Don't, so please submit what you have. We want to see the art, because we want to show off to the world, because JBJS has always been the publication thought leader. We want to show off to the world what, you know, orthopedic surgeons can create other than correcting a Cobb angle.
Great way to end. And I'm so grateful you mentioned Ken DeHaven. I actually own four clocks that Kenny repaired for me, and what a great man and a great example of the life well led. And so this is really important stuff, balancing one's life and spending time in reflection and paying attention to family and life's balance. So we hope that the audience will get that message, and then we'll share the message. And most importantly, that you'll send us your creative stuff to What's Important Arts and Humanities, and And we look forward to an expanding program, maybe to the point where at some point we can have a separate publication a couple times a year. But thanks so much, Bob, for taking on this job and for spending the time this morning. And Mo, thanks for that wonderful first contribution and all of the leadership that you are providing for our community in this area. So have a good day, gentlemen. And Bob, your Ortho Joe Cup will be in the mail soon.
And I love it. Thank you. It's a real pleasure being with you both. And Mo, thank you for your lovely comments and your great contribution. And wish you all a great Tuesday.
Until next time. Yeah, until next time, everyone. Thanks so much.
Right, bye-bye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.